What's going on, everybody? Welcome into the 52nd edition of the Tuesday Track Talk podcast featuring your Three Stones Pit Crew. I'm Kellen, your Jack Man.
I'm your Tire Changer Cam.
And I'm your Gas Man Cam.
So it's the 52nd edition, finally marking a year with a few weeks in the midst of what's been a full year of podcast editions here. So we finally hit the calendar year mark in terms of the number of podcasts you can listen to. So pretty cool deal there as we're rocking and rolling. But before we get into it, fellas, how we doing?
I'm all right. It's got some more stuff around the house around here. I think figure out where to store a couple things and pretty much done with the quote unquote move.
Nice. Settled.
Yep.
Nice.
I don't know about you guys, but I think I don't want to jinx it, but I feel like this today felt like the first official day of fall. You had your windows open, felt it this morning and got up this morning and went for a little walk before work, and it was a brisk 51 degrees. And so that was, feels like fall. And then not only that, but then we get into full swing of things, football on Saturday, football on Sunday, racing, playoffs, everything. So fall's my favorite time of year, so just gonna try to enjoy it because it's sad, but we're about to end September already, so
yeah.
Scary, but
and then then fall starts to fall at some point.
Yeah,
but hey, at the end of the day, we got a little racing left to do here. So
that we do.
Let's go ahead and jump right into kind of our first quick race recap. Lucas Oil Late Models, they were at Knoxville for the Lucas Oil Late Model Nationals. We'll kind of touch on the Friday night one. That was kind of one we had all kind of narrowed in on a little bit ahead of the Saturday feature, but we cut into it before we get to the late models. I actually got to mention this because I thought this was pretty damn cool. The dirt cars, the dirt car Crown Nationals, they put on a hell of a show on Friday night. And then they had mentioned this. You can't not mention this. Kelly Shryock won that feature. Damn good show. He's already run 100 races this year. He's been in the top 10 82 times.
Jesus.
So if you're a betting man, him being in the top 10 is going to be a pretty damn good bet.
Yep.
So those guys put on a hell of a show. I was excited to watch that. They put on a damn good show, but just had to mention that as he won that feature. So cool deal there. All right, let's get into the Lucas Oil feature for Friday night. Night started off, you had a couple guys up front that found some speed. Max Blair was one. He had a really good car. Even with the invert, he just ultimately rolled up on Bobby Pierce. He deleted that 3.5 second lead. He just rolled the bottom and he found speed there and was able to kind of catch him. And he brought Brandon Shepard with him. So Blair led a lap or two there at the scoring loop over Pierce, but just couldn't quite hang on to the lead. And then actually coming down to the end, Brandon Shepard gave it a good run there, and he even kind of showed the nose at the end to try to get that feature from Pierce. But
hell, that was, if I remember right, that bottom line has ended up where everybody kind of ended up.
They did. Yep. Didn't quite widen out as much as I think some of the guys were anticipating. No, I always find Knoxville unique because the guys like to put that left front right up on the berm.
Yep.
And it's just they put the fender in the nose, and that's kind of a dangerous game to play a little bit because you can fold it under. But
and especially how different, obviously, the sprint cars run there as well, where that berm is pretty much off limits. Can't touch her. You're going bye-bye, for lack of a better term. So
yeah,
I was gonna say, Yeah, totally understand that too. For any of you World Outlaws players, you get the old nose on that on the World Outlaws game, and your hands are gonna get busy.
But yeah, I just kind of forgot about that until I dialed into that race, and it's just you forget that they put that left front up on there and it really loads that right rear. So kind of an interesting line, but ultimately that race went caution free for all 25. That was a 7 grand to win feature. Brandon Shepherd, 11 to second. That was a hell of a showing by the old B5. So that was a damn good race. Didn't quite widen out as much as we had hoped, but your top four, and these names will resurface later too as well. Bobby Pierce, Brandon Shepherd, Max Blair, and Devin Moran were your top four. So damn good race. That was just a little teaser for the 50 grand win feature that Bobby Pierce took as well.
Talking about the Saturday race, talk about a very lucky break for Squirrel, surely.
Yep.
With him having the issues that he had, the rain coming down and them stopping the race, able to kind of figure out what they needed to do and get back out on the track.
Yep.
Saved him a heck of a run.
Yeah, and a good finish too.
Yep. And he came up draw strong too. He went 15-2 in that race.
Yeah, that was very interesting with the red with the rain. I think that's got to be the first time I've seen that on the dirt side of things where you get a little sprinkle and they just kind of wait it out, and the next thing you know, they're back racing
Kind
again.
of packed it in a little bit.
Yep, rolled her in and said, "All right, car covers for what?" Well, it was only like 15 or 20 minutes, really,
Something like that, yeah.
and sent them back out there. But yeah, Bobby Pierce managed to cash that $50,000 payday for his first Lucas Oil Knoxville Nationals. So. Good show. Kind of any final thoughts before we jump ahead to the next one?
I'm gonna say Davenport just kind of showed why he doesn't like Knoxville. Obviously, he won on Thursday night, but he goes from 2-6 on Saturday night.
It's
Made
kind of like
that
going.
look. Go ahead, you got it.
It's kind of like going to your in-laws. You don't want to go, but you have to be there.
Yeah, for
And
clarification, he likes his in-laws.
then, Davenport doesn't tweet too much, but when he does, it's listened to him.
Yep.
So that was funny. Yeah.
My guess is he got back to the old hauler that night after that comment and probably had a missed call from wife and said, so what do you got to say? Oh, we got some explaining to do here. But no, I mean, that a good race. It's always fun when you get a hard charger like Bishop going 11-2 and right there at the end. And again, Pierce, Bishop, Blair, and Moran. Not to discredit Blair, but the other three, I mean, those are three and best of the business right now. So anytime you get those guys up front, just fun to watch and fun to just sit back and watch those guys do their thing and put on a heck of a show. But no, fun race to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. Their season's winding down. We'll talk about it a little bit with the race previews. The Lucas Oil guys locking in their final four for the championship. So, a little different format this year, not just a single race. So, they are locked in for their finals. So, cool. Well, let's go from one big dirt race to the next. We'll send it down to Van Groll. I'll kind of let you take lead on this whole deal with the Four Crown Nationals at Eldora.
Yeah, so this is one that I was really looking forward to. I always like it when the USAC guys get all together, all three series come in and race together, and they obviously do that for Eldora and the Crown Nationals there. Made it to four Crown Nationals this year with High Limit coming into the fold there as well. Touched really quick on Friday. Justin Peck won High Limit race on Friday, stamping a 93 race winless streak for him. And then the midgets put on a hell of a show on the first night. They had four cars under a blanket for the lead at one point in time, just swapping sliders back and forth. So hell of a race for the midgets on night one. Moving to night two, High Limit got the night started out. Actually, it was the sprint cars that got the night started out with them, but touching a High Limit. Rico Abreu, he goes wire to wire basically and wins the High Limit portion of it. He loves Eldora. I mean, that's tracks right up his alley. And then of course he had the tribute to Bloomer at the beginning of the race, the Dear Bloomer letter to it. And obviously how fitting is it? He wins it with the Boomer Chop, the Bloomer Chop, yep, and then the sayings on the car as well. So
Yeah, and that's pretty
just fitting
cool.
for him.
Yeah, fitting for him, and especially knowing kind of the connection there, especially with the dome when Bloomer comes out and Rico's up on his shoulders as they come out for driver intros, probably the best driver intros in the business. But having that connection to him and being able to do that, it's you're gonna have to think that Bloomer was looking down on that one. So,
And Rico definitely loves his, I mean, this was not a memorial race by any means, but he loves his memorial races and takes a lot of pride in winning those ones. And you can kind of say this was a de facto one for him.
I know,
Right.
especially when you saw the, I don't know if you, anybody saw the little tribute he put out, or the poem that he put out on his Twitter page, like a minute, 2 minute video. Another, it was a poem, but it was about racing to, and it was a tribute to Bloomer. So, hard not to say that Bloomer gave him a little helping hand in that race, but Rico's fun to watch.
Rico's kind of fearless. That's
Well, that, yes. And
you gotta be fearless to run a sprint car, but he's fearless on a little different level, I think.
yeah. So, and lo and behold, he's actually second in their point standings right now. He leapfrogged Tyler Courtney. He's got 8 wins on the year so far.
People
He's really
forget
come
that.
on as of
Actually,
late.
I saw that Master Gassers, I believe, put out the earnings money. He's second in the year behind Gravel in winnings. Dude's won $555,000 this year.
He's coming on as of late.
And to be honest, and maybe I'll you can call an ace if I'm haven't been paying attention, or I guess I haven't been paying the last month or so as close attention, but he's I feel like he's been doing it slightly under the radar. Like
Oh,
it's not like
absolutely.
he not like he like when you say that he's won over $500,000 in winnings, I'm like, whoa. Like granted it helps, didn't he have that $100,000 win a couple weeks ago? And get that $102,000 win.
He's quietly putting together a hell of a campaign.
That's the moral of the story, yeah, is that he's goes about his business the right way, and he's not in the headlines ever for the wrong reasons. It's if he's ever in the headlines, it's for winning. So, and I look, I'm just gonna come out and say this. Because I've always wondered this. Obviously, being a midget, I would like to just see the setup in his race car. Like,
He's
honestly.
shown videos of it before. I don't remember where I saw it, but I know it's like the seats moved up with extra bars and back behind him, and he's got like blocks on the pedals, and I've seen it before. I just don't remember where I've seen it.
I'm just like curious because, like, obviously, like that is. Like that is a whole nother level of impressive. Like,
The setup's got great because if you're not comfortable in the car, it's going to be a long night
long
and it's going to
race.
be a long season. And
And
it's
while we're on this topic, can we just not forget that he used to drive a truck in the truck series.
Stopped at a late model a couple times.
Yeah, you kind of forget that he's done a little more racing and a few different things than just a sprint car, which is what he's known for.
And sprint car and a midget car.
Yep.
Bottom line is, Rico's a beast, so that's what it comes down to.
Absolutely.
Real quick, because I'm looking at it in the point standings. Brad Sweet being the model of consistency and showing why he's a five-time champ of the World of Outlaws. In 47 features, he's finished in the top 10 41 times. The next closest to him is Rico, and second, who's finished in the top 10 only 33 times.
Damn.
So, talking about just being there and getting your points when you can get them.
That's ultimately that's points racing.
It's not wins championships. So,
Yeah, I was gonna just gonna jump ahead here a little bit. Another kind of notable, Spencer Baston.
18-3.
That you talk about a hard charger. That is a hell of a night. And if he doesn't start 18th, he might have a shot at giving Rico all he can handle.
Yep, 100%. So,
It's
no.
quite a show.
Yep, Highland definitely put on a good show. Moving on to the USAC races, and we'll kind of touch on them here briefly. So obviously all three of them, the USAC sprint cars, the Silver Crown, and the midgets were all in action. Dason Pursley was one of the few drivers that was going all three, trying to sweep the crowns basically, and he damn near did it. So CV nearly, first off, nearly spins on his own in the sprint car feature, comes up top, loses it, comes down the field, almost takes out a few other cars, but everybody skates by. And then Dason comes from 5-1 in the sprint car feature to end up winning that one, which was the first race of the show. So that puts him automatically on the radar of, all right, he's your guy if he's going to sweep. And then moving on to the midget race, Zach Dom cut down on Weigel in the midget feature and took out about six cars in the outside wall. It's just the guys kind of spun and flipped and gathered up in the outside wall.
Yeah, that's kind of a
So,
narrow little wreck there in one.
and I was kind of thinking about this too. I'm like, that's a big track for the midget cars to race on too.
There's a lot of speed in those little cars.
There's a lot of speed in those cars.
And as one would say, Kellen will get this reference, wheel-to-wheel contact definitely at 100.
Correct.
On the World Outlaws game, when you're racing, you can adjust your settings on how touchy, if like you touch wheels with, the CPU as you're racing.
Sure.
And so like if you put it at zero, it basically is like you got a piece of plexiglass on the outside of your car. Like you can
Sure.
hit tires and you won't do anything. But if you set it at 100, the moment you touch tires,
You're
it's
gone.
realistic. You're
Yeah.
so situation there at that race, wheel-to-wheel contact, definitely 100.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jesus. So ultimately, Dason Pursley wins the midget feature as well. He actually goes back to back on the midget side as he won on Friday night as well. So going into the Silver Crown race last night, race of the night, he was 2-for-2. So obviously all eyes on him, and especially with him starting on the pin for the Silver Crown race. So as we get into the Silver Crown race, they run mainly green flag for 50 laps for them. God damn it, who was? Oh, Mitchell Moles. He ends up passing a lap car with about three to go, takes out the oil cooler on the side of the cars with a nice big flame on it. He's lucky he didn't cut his tire down. But again, Mitchell Moles, who took the lead with 13 to go, ends up or leads 13 laps into the race, leads the last 37 and ends up winning the Silver Crown race. So spoils Dason Pursley of his Silver Crown sweep, but nonetheless, good racing all around for them. I just want to look up the Silver Crown results real quick, see where he finished. One of the few dirt races on the Silver Crown schedule.
Oh, a lot of action at Eldora.
He finished
It
fourth. Dason Pursley
was a
finished
dusty
fourth.
one.
That too. I know we had that video in our group chat of how dusty it got.
Yeah.
But when you're on four races and you're trying to just click them off.
She's gonna dry out at some point. Yep.
Yeah. So Silver Crown, that was a 15,000 to win. Let's see if I can see what the other ones were real quick. Oops, wrong race. Bennett Foley. The midget race was. Oh, come on. Where is it? I know they post it. Was 15 to win as well. And
Good
then
pity.
the. Yep. So
Oh
I
boy.
think they were all 15 across the board.
That's right. Yeah, I think I did see that they were all 15.
So either
But
way.
yeah. Good money on the line for sure.
Yep.
Good money,
So,
big car count.
correct. Yeah, that's the thing. The big car count. Yeah, a lot of guys there. So again, good race, good event. Always love it when it comes around. Eldora always just has a knack for putting on some pretty good racing.
Absolutely. Well, any final thoughts before we jump ahead to probably the biggest section of podcast for today?
Yeah, we have a lot
Well,
to talk about.
this is going to take a while.
this is so, if you've been following along with this whole segment of the podcast, we don't know what to call it. It started as the 5 minutes of fun facts. It was 15 minutes. Then it turned into a half an hour. Well, it's going to be all of that today. This is your news in terms of,
The hell's been going on in the recent world?
it's driver contracts, it's driver changes, it's leadership changes, it's parting ways, guys returning home. However, you're. We got a little bit of everything. Guys retiring. Who wants to go first?
I guess I'll take the first one and we'll just figure it out from there.
Yep.
Bubba Wallace, they made this one known pretty early. Bubba Wallace got a multi-year extension with 2311. They made it a point as well in their sponsorship meetings that they had or summit that they had that they will be racing next year, charter or no charter. So take that for what you feel like it's worth.
Yeah.
You
But
know, again, we always say that we don't like doing it, but we always do it anyways, calling for people's jobs. But I will say, I feel like he's somebody he's run well, but again, when you got a boss like Denny Hamlin and Michael Jordan, you're looking at two winners and
the expectations are short of a lot.
correct. And when you got, unfortunately, a teammate who is, I would say, a championship contender right now, they're going to look at you and say, you know, nothing is, you know, well, what's going on here? One car is a championship contender in year, you know, whatever. So I guess I thought his seat was warming up a little bit. I can't say I'm surprised that he got an extension. But I also, if it would have been announced that he wasn't getting extension, that they were parting ways, I would have been like, yep. But either way, you know, after his, yes, again, then he follows it up with a solid race at Bristol. And in his post-race interview, says, you know, on paper, this is statistically my best year of my career. So I don't know. Not surprised, but it looks like 2311 has there for the foreseeable future. That is the Reddick and Wallace show is going to be what we're going to be seeing. So,
Absolutely. Jumping down to number two, and I think this kind of comes as the biggest surprise of silly season. Not concerning the two names, but just how they went about it.
when I heard what the deal was, because I heard it before they made the announcement, I'm like, apparently it had been discussed in the garage for the longest time, but I'm like, I didn't even know that this was a thought
So
on how
basically,
they went about it.
so news comes out that Justin Haley will drive the Spire 7 to finish the year. So starting in Kansas, he will drive the Spire 7, and that they also announced he will drive that in 2025. So the 7 is now claimed for starting next week through the end of 2025. Corey LaJoie, who did occupy the 7, he will shift over and drive the Rick Ware Racing 51. So basically, an in-season trade is how I looked at that, I guess. That's
A trade with Spire confirming their lineup for next year.
correct.
With we love when there's smoke coming out, and we love if there's a little there's some coals that are warm, we love throwing gas on them. But there's been some talk about Hendrick having five drivers under contract, and Justin Haley's name is getting thrown in there, so
Brad Kay also alluded to that in his press conference. So
yep.
he had talked to him, and they had a deal that with this Hendrick situation, he had a deal that he couldn't match.
Which makes you wonder about, we just had a serious conversation about a driver of the 48 car and his job situation, and he said he's good for one more year. I don't know.
There's
Look.
also to add to this, I've seen this like today on Twitter. Take this for what it's worth again. Spire has been in conversation with Chevy to get themselves to a tier one program. So,
Which, with the investments that they're making, it's not surprising.
yep. Basically, what it comes down to is a little more de facto, they have an alliance with Hendrick. So you can't say that these things aren't all interrelated in some fashion.
Correct.
So I, to me, that was a surprise. I was figuring, end of the year, they're going to make an announcement. They're going to finish their respective seasons. And they said, yeah, no, we're going to do this now.
So there was conversation about when was the last time, if any time, there was a trade of drivers. 2004, 2005, Jeff Burton left Roush Fenway with about 10 races to go and went to RCR into that 31. And then
Got
Carl Edwards jumped into that 99. So it wasn't a trade per se, but drivers have obviously way back when you had multiple drivers run multiple seasons or with multiple teams throughout a year, but that's the most recent instance of a driver leaving a team in the middle of the year to go to their future team.
So literally 2 decades.
Yep.
And I got a few thoughts on this. One, Kellen, you'll get this reference too. This is, I feel like, unprecedented times for what we just saw. But I'd compare this to a couple years ago when, Ben Askren, for anybody that knows, was a he was in a some fighting league, and all of a sudden, for the first time in history, he got traded to the UFC. And it was the first trade in UFC history. Nobody even really knew it was a thing until it happened. And but somehow it was always an option. And I think this is the same situation. It's like, I didn't even know this was an option. But apparently it is. And to be honest, I think it's kind of awesome. I think you see it in I think you see it in other sports, a football team, obviously I want to set some boundaries here. Like, you shouldn't be able to trade somebody who's a playoff driver in the playoffs at this point in the year, whatever. Like, you should have like a trade deadline, like the NFL. But outside of that, I think it's kind of awesome. Two drivers, one's on the up. If both teams think it's a good deal for us to swap drivers and for, whatever reason, go for it. But I would caution, I don't want this to turn into just ring around the rosy of all of a sudden it's like, oh, who's in the 48 this week? All right, 6 weeks later, oh, got another trade. But
No.
I just because I am interested in kind of the business side a little bit, I'd be interested to see what happens with the sponsors. Do they jump ship? Do they stay with the teams that they're on?
Because you have
That's
to, there's been some contracts that have been signed there as well.
correct. So I'd be interested to see that as well. So
What
in
now it gets a little bit interesting because yes, Haley is getting a jump with the seven group, but he is not going to be with his crew chief for next year, who will be Rodney Childers.
Yep.
So he's getting a head start with Spire with that organization, but the guy calling the shots on the box when he starts next week is not the guy he will have at the start of 2025.
And I don't even know if it's going to be the same guy he's got now.
That very well could change in a hurry too.
So, yeah.
And I will say two thing, last thing on this is I thought, which, and maybe I'm missing it, maybe I'm not, but everybody questioned the Justin Haley move from colleague to Rick Ware. And I think I speak for all of us that Justin Haley is definitely outdrove his equipment this year
Absolutely.
and outperformed. And to be honest, I'm looking at him going, I don't know who Ford, necessarily has in the pipeline, but it's like, I would have thought Ford would have been like, hey, this is somebody we need to keep. He's stock up the entire year. And I don't know how Ford went to try to. Ford wouldn't have been like, hey, this is somebody we need to keep in our camp. And I don't know. Maybe it came down to pockets. Like maybe Brad Kay is right. Maybe the deal he got is just that steep. Who knows? But, stock up for Justin Haley, and I thought, Ford probably maybe they did try to do their best to keep him, but
I guess kind of the last question at this point, I'll let you guys kind of hit it, but what are the real reality expectations for him in the seven next year?
gotta get a win. I think
Okay,
you gotta get a win on a non-super speedway race.
you're going that far, huh?
You got
Okay.
Rodney Childers on the box. You're going to a team that has made a lot of investments in their team as a whole. McDowell's coming on board. You're gonna have Holzevar in the camp as well. You have a ton of resources, and that team has come on as of late too. I think Haley has to get a win. I'm not gonna go to the extent of saying all three drivers are to get wins, but I think Haley is one of them guys that I think should get a win.
Okay. So,
Hold on. Let me just chime in.
oh.
Disagree. Doesn't have to get a win. I mean, look at what he's replacing. No disrespect, but guy's been in that seat for how long? 4 or 5 years?
Yeah, give or take.
And hasn't had a top 10 in a non-restrictor plate. Like, all right. I would say put that seven car, put her in the playoffs, Haley. You'll be, I think he'll be, come Daytona next year, he'll be 17 minus four. Get her in the playoffs, Haley. Then I think that's a good step for that team. But a win?
Here,
I don't know.
to give you one.
I guess here's the other thing is, I guess I look at Justin Haley and go, boy, I would have never anticipated you running in the top 10 in a Rick Ware car. So
But
if
with
you
the true,
come in a
but
Spire car.
with Spire 2, you got Carson Holzfahr, who's on the brink of a win. You got Michael McDowell, who's not a too bad of a driver himself, and is basically going to be the leader of that team. And then Justin Haley, who, like you had just said, outperforming the equipment that he's in.
Yep. Last question to this. Where does he run weekly in that car? What range? Is he an 8 to 15 guy?
No.
Not that
I was
high.
gonna say like that 13 to 17.
Okay.
I was gonna spread it out just a little bit more. I'd say 12 to 20.
I would definitely expect inside the top 20.
Okay.
Yep.
Yep. All right. I was gonna give it like the 9 to 16 range. So, somewhere in there. He'll get a couple top tens here and there. He's
Yep,
proven he can do
100%.
it in the equipment he's been in. I just, they're gonna flip a strategy somewhere and they're gonna have a really good shot to, if not win one, be right there. But I just, outside of, doing something a little crazy on a week that they have an advantage, I just was curious what your guys' opinions are. Week in and week out, where does that seven car run?
Which leads me to my final thought of the expectations. Everybody's in that 13 to 19 range, 12 to 20, 9 to 16. Come Daytona, he'll be sitting at about 16 or 17 in the points and riding around at Daytona,
Fighting for his life.
fighting for his life. But no, honestly, I actually am excited to see how that pans out because obviously LaJoy again has. He's been a wrecking ball, but he's had some speed. So
Yep.
I mean, he was running good at Bristol before he spun out there.
I think the one word we can describe this whole situation would be is intrigue.
For real.
This will be a one that it'll take time to play out.
It'll take a little time to play up, but you're not going to be able to take your eye off of it.
And
So.
intrigue too. Last point. Sorry, we've been talking about this one for 10 minutes. Last point in this too. Intrigue. I mean, this could set the precedent. I mean, if this turns out to be fantastic for both guys, this might be the start of something that we might start see more frequently. Next year we might see another driver trade. Who knows? The entire situation is intriguing.
Who do we say that Trackhouse maybe sets that up with the number of drivers that they have?
They got their fingers and everything.
For real.
Trackhouse and colleague.
Trackhouse and
Just
Junior Motorsports.
throwing that out there. Just throwing it out there.
Yep. All right. Cam, you got the next one?
Yeah. And as we were just talking about, Trackhouse has got their fingers in everything. But this time it was on the opposite end. But Ty Norris announced, or they announced that he is leaving Trackhouse. And it was not shortly thereafter that rumors were that he was going to Kaulig. And shortly thereafter, it was confirmed he is going to Kaulig as the chief business officer. So, yeah, it's been that again. Trackhouse has got their toes in everything, and I feel like this, colleague and Trackhouse kind of alliance with SVG and this, that, and the other thing, they're, I don't know, intertwined. And yeah, Ty Norris leaves Trackhouse and heads a colleague for a new start. So,
With very high praise from Justin Marks.
Ty Norris, but Ty Norris has been one of the more well-known and better executives in the NASCAR industry. I mean, he was the team president back in the DEI days, so he's been around the block.
Proven he can build an organization. So, all right. Heading to the next one.
All right, I'll take this one too.
Here, go
Harrison
for it.
Burton to AM Racing in the AM 15 for the Xfinity Series 2025. I'll say I was a little bit surprised this is where he wound up, but he did say one thing that was important was that he went someplace that he felt what was he was wanted. So again, this is coming off this, again, I don't want to disrespect, but this AM 15 car coming off of a relatively not very good year. Expectations are, I would say, relatively low. Good chance for Harrison Burton to come in and be a wealth of knowledge in a Ford car and hopefully see what he can do to shake it up and see what he can do to build that program.
You were just talking about the Ford program and where their pipeline is. You just brought it up. Harrison Burton stays with the Ford program by doing this.
Absolutely.
And obviously, this car was the car that Deegan was in earlier this year as well.
Vacated, had a few good runs with a couple cup guys. And I kind of honestly forgot about the 15 seat there for a while. It's been very quiet. So kind of forgotten about that one until Harrison Burton breaks a little news. Staying in the Xfinity series, obviously last week we talked about Parker Kligerman stepping away full time. Big Machine did not waste time announcing their driver. They are tapping Nick Sanchez from the trucks to drive their number 48.
I think this was kind of a quiet move too. I didn't see Nick Sanchez moving up.
I did not either. I figured he had one more year in the truck series
Yep.
and
Jump
then
up.
he make a move from there, you know. Especially with all of the departures from the truck series, he was going to
Yep.
have an opportunity to run out front weekly with that series. So again, it'll be interesting to see how that whole deal shakes out. So Mangrove got. Yep.
I was gonna say I
Sanchez.
could
Probably thrilled to get out of the truck series and get away from Crafton.
Speaking of truck series, Dawson Sutton will be replacing Ty Dillon in the Rackley War 25 truck for the remainder of the year. Dillon will remain on the team as a driver coach. Obviously, Dawson Sutton, very notably, is kind of the family truck. He's been running the late model for them these handful of years. We'll be jumping into the family truck starting next year, start for the remainder of the year, and would expect to be next year as well.
So this kind of leads again to where there's smoke, there might be a fire. Ty Dillon's kind of been rumored around that Colleague 31 car. Does Ty Dillon have his plans figured out? And Rackley said, we're going to get our guy and we're going to start him now.
And Colleague has come out and said that they still have a cup lineup to announce yet.
Yep. They're at
So,
31, the 31, and they do have that 13 yet as well.
and you don't know where Hemric's going yet either.
Yeah, so maybe there's a little smoke with fire on that whole deal too. So and, time will tell.
What is going on?
So
Hemric doesn't, if I don't know. Head scratching. If Hemric doesn't get a second year, or, I don't know. I guess Colleague, just honestly, Colleague's done some head scratching stuff. Yeah, just throwing it out there. Honestly, like they have, and I don't know. I guess I'm just prepared to scratch my head again.
got it. Going down to the next, so we'll leave that right there. Landon Hoffman comes out today and says that he's got a ride for the Valley Star Credit Union 300 at Martinsville this weekend. Big late model stock race in Martinsville. Also comes out and says he will be going full-time cars tour racing next year with the Carroll Speed Shop. So solidifies his plans for next year for his racing season. So cool deal that he gets to announce that one, he's got a ride for the weekend, and two, he doesn't have to stress too much about next year because he'll be in a seat.
And obviously he'll have his family car as well for any filler type of races as well.
Yep, absolutely. So
So,
good for him.
Connor Hall going to that race this weekend or no?
Sure thing so.
I would expect it. It's huge.
God, stop it.
You lose it every time.
Dude, he is showing up and immediately parking the hauler and going to find the
Oh my God.
race official. I don't, this dude doesn't give up on this stuff, does he?
You laugh as hard every time at this too.
Dude, I mean, come on. When you're 48 laps down and you think you should be on the lead, like, do you think the race officials just screwed? Like, come on. That is funny, but
All right. Carry on.
yep.
All right.
Let's talk dirt news now.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes.
Jump right in.
Ridge and Sons Racing and Corey Eliason announced that they will not be fielding a sprint car in 2025, citing the lack of funding as the reason. So, Corey Eliason, a sprint car vet, will be looking for a seat for 2025. So That's the one of the news there.
Kind of want to take these next two.
Have at her.
Was gonna say Hunter Schoenberg and TKS Racing are parting ways, effective immediately. Team is weighing out scheduling options. I'm sure Hunter is weighing out scheduling options as well. Just adding on to the sprint car silly season going on so far. And then one that I think was kind of unexpected, kind of under the radar, but Dave Blaney. So they ran the third, or they ran the Lou Blaney Memorial at Sharon Speedway this past weekend. Dave Blaney wins his third race, obviously for his father. And says in Victory Lane that he's retiring. That was his last race. Planned on being his last race. He went out on top.
Couldn't ask for a better scenario for that. You could tell how emotional he was, and just
Oh,
seeing
yeah.
that was very cool to see. And just, you couldn't ask for a better victory lap, if you want to call it that, literally. So that was cool to see.
And
Very cool.
kudos to the World of Outlaws too for showing the highlight of him winning the race and acknowledging that he was retiring, obviously being a former champion for the Outlaws as well. I still go back to what he did, won the Outlaws race at Sharon Speedway a handful of years ago, upset all the guys, and the crowd went, that place went just crazy.
Absolutely.
So cool to see.
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of a little bit of news on the dirt late model side of things this week. We find that Kai Blight is parting from his US-based late model team, and he will be returning home to Western Australia for the 2025 season. So he'll be headed back down under to be racing full time. Back at home. So it's a little dirt late model news there.
Yeah. Last one I want to touch on here real quick came out today. IndyCar has announced that they will have a charter system starting for 25 teams. And then as the system goes on, I want to make sure I get my wording right here. I thought it was going to go down to 22 based on the, yeah, so entry also. Charter, they'll have qualified guaranteed position each race except for the Indy 500. That is still going to be the fastest 33. And an annual award program that compensates the top 22 finishers in the prior year's season. This is a deal that runs through 2031. So 25 was given out to each team with a maximum of three per team, which makes sense of why Chip Ganassi went from five to three earlier a couple weeks ago. In coinciding with this charter system.
So they had obviously come to a charter agreement, as we've been talking about that with NASCAR, and he made a move knowing what was coming. So smart business decision, let's be honest.
Yep. Also, it looks like we're three for three as far as the podcasts and somebody not wearing a shirt.
Yeah, again. He ain't listening, is he?
No.
My Atlanta.
What the hell?
Unbelievable.
Some people's
Well,
kids, I tell you.
for real. I guess from one unbelievable to the next, why don't we go ahead and let's wrap up this Bristol night race.
Gonna have two big conversations coming out of this one.
Yep. Oh, where do we even want to start?
Well, Larson took the woodshed and all the wood out of the shed.
And he
On
gave it
this
to
one,
everyone. Yeah.
yeah. I mean, this
He
was
took.
as bad as Truex in that Coke 600 race, Larson at North Wilkesboro. I mean,
Akis dominating the spring race in the truck series.
yeah, it's just an
I.
ass whooping. It's there's no way of putting it. Straight up ass whooping.
As Luke Fickell told the Badger team the other day, if you haven't had your ass whooped, you did now. Well, that was the Cup Series field, let's be honest.
Did he lead basically the last 462 laps? Took the lead and never gave it up.
Yeah, he maybe wasn't scored one of those laps on a restart, but I still think he was.
Yeah. So let's
I
see.
mean, what's the Let's even look at what the percentage is on that because that's asinine.
Yeah, because Bowman led 34, 92% of the laps.
He led 92.4% of the laps. Talk about just scorching the field.
Yeah, because Bowman led 34, Bubba led a lap, Reddick led three, and then Larson obviously led the rest.
Put on an MF in clinic. That's all there was to it.
Yeah, so, and obviously, the other things that come up with this is the tire situation. Everybody, obviously, that was the expectation coming into this was what were the tires going to do? Obviously, it was a lot warmer than what it was in the spring race, and the tires just did not fall off as much as anticipated, and there were no green flag pit stops.
Yeah. They claim
So
that was
it's,
the same tire compound.
I heard this conversation today from Todd Gordon on the late shift on SiriusXM, and I thought this was interesting because obviously the conversation came up of, do you need more horsepower? Because the more horsepower, theoretically, you burn off the tires then. He argued that you need to have a smaller tire. You need to go back to the 10-inch tire and not this 12-inch that we currently have. Keep the same horsepower, keep the same car. You need a smaller tire.
I can agree with that. I mean, you got to do one of two things. Either you got to put more horsepower in them or you got to narrow the tire up. Same
Different,
effect,
yep.
different ways of going about it. Yeah, there's nine
So
ways to skin a cat. Yep, that's what you do.
for those of us who aren't as smart and as intelligent, what will going from a 12-inch tire to a 10-inch tire do?
It burns it off faster.
It's 2 less inches of contact on the surface. They're just literally
You just don't
talking
have the
tire
grip.
wear. Yeah, there's less width.
Just don't have the grip.
Yeah.
Which it's you do the same thing with adding more horsepower compared to the tire. It's just it's your horsepower to tire ratio.
All it is. Yep.
Yep. So,
Nine ways to skin a cat. It's just a matter of how you do it.
you guys are much more well versed on cars and the setups and the dynamics of them. Why do we never hear a NASCAR guy say, "Give us a 10-inch tire"? Why is everybody always begging for more horsepower? Is
Because
it
they want speed.
Yeah.
Drivers want speed. Crew chiefs want less tire
Yeah.
because
Got
especially with, well, obviously the horsepower comes through the funding. The smaller teams don't want more horsepower because they can't build that.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then with the tire, everybody's got the same tire, so you keep that level playing field. So crew chiefs want more tire or less tire, my bad. Drivers obviously want more horsepower because they want more power at their hands. The thing that came up with it too was I'm trying to remember what the argument was with the horsepower. Oh, it was what more do we have to prove with horsepower? We've proved that we can get up to the speeds that we can with these cars. What's the point on getting more? You should be fixing the racing, not the, you should be going for racing, not for speed, is basically what it was.
Yeah. Your diminishing return on adding horsepower is not a lot.
Yep. So
Where
that was the
you're
argument that
making.
was made this evening on when I my brief time coming back from my travel to here that I got out of it.
There's conversations around, and the short track package has not been great, let's be honest.
Correct. And notably when we switched to this car,
Yep.
it's a very distinct. When
So
we switch this car.
we'll kind of get into the race here a little bit, but we missed them last week, so we're gonna hit them now. The Gluck poll, 27.2% of people said yes, that was a good race. Bristol, that race in the rankings is last of 19 Bristol races, including the dirt. And in this poll, that race ranked 55 of 56 on short track races.
The one that finished last was the Martinsville Spring Race from 2 years ago.
That was single file, one lane. There was three
Yep.
freaking passes the entire race, whatever it was.
Yep. Yep.
So the glaring reviews, not great. It didn't, I don't know, it didn't feel that way to me, but I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
I saw a comment. I'm going to see if I can find it. So I'm going to let you guys talk.
All right.
Part of it was is that there has been some really good racing this year.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, I bet you I'm not going to find that comment anymore. Dang it.
Not as consistently as what we're used to.
Ha, there it is. I found it. So historic racetrack aerials. Basically, he just posts old racetrack photos. Had an interesting comment. He says, I think I've only hit no on three races this year because the worst NASCAR race is more palpable than most other sporting events, which that's more personal preference than anything. But last night is what you call in the business an eye-opening experience. The industry is terrified of failure, so we trudge on with this.
Do we consider the spring race with the tire experiment failure?
I don't even think it was an experiment. It was just you were given a cold weather race that severely altered what you had planned coming in. You brought the same tire back. Nothing, there was only one thing changed. Two things. One,
Temperature.
it was warmer.
Yep, temp.
And two, you put PJ1 on the bottom.
I guess my follow-up question to that was that a mistake spraying those bottom 2 feet?
I think they should have sprayed the top too, personally.
I agree. They should have sprayed right up against the wall.
Or in the upper groove, whatever that was.
Yep.
I think they should have done that. Because
Yep.
they did, because they had the resin for the Xfinity race. They kept whatever was left of that and then did the 2 feet of the PJ1
Yep.
on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
So. The other thing that came
Again,
up too
again,
was
we're going back to this conversation. We talk about super late model racing. What are we doing to fix racing? We're just spraying. Why are we just spraying? Why do we have to spray? Why can't we find a permanent solution that fixes that? Then we don't have to spray. I get it. It's Hoosier. It's Goodyear. It's a different combination. It's a different story. It's a different setup. It's different tax brackets, however you want to say it. But it just feels like in all of racing right now, asphalt side of things, what are we doing to solve everyone's problems? Get out sprayer. I don't know.
Yeah, I just
Kind of head
did.
scratching.
If you like old school Bristol where you're on the bottom, I mean, that was your type of race. But the other thing too is, and Arrow's obviously not as president there, but it was there. You couldn't get a guy to run that top. Or even get close to a guy to even kind of nudge him out of the way. You just stalled out.
Well, that was the thing is you were looking at it and they're talking about Martin Truex he gets a speeding penalty, which kind of unfortunately killed his playoff hopes, but he's in the deep in the field and he's struggling his ass off to get by a colleague in Rick Ware Racing Cars in a Joe Gibbs ride. Like,
When you've been running top five the entire race.
no knock on those two organizations, but let's be honest, the Joe Gibbs crew is gonna have a little more behind him than those two organizations.
Tier one program.
Bingo, you got it. I don't. And unfortunately for him, that speeding penalty kind of eliminated him.
Dude,
The
that
same
was actually
course.
painful to watch, to be honest with you.
Same.
That was like death by paper cuts to have a rocket as fast as he did, and then he made one slip up, and then
Just
you just
literally the
watch.
story of his season.
It just agonizing, like watching him not be able to get around anybody. And I was actually listening to him on the at his scanner up during the race, and it was he was didn't say really anything. It was he was just driving the car, and they were giving him lap times and 0.2 better there, good 3 and 4. try this in one and two, and it was, he just did not say anything and just drove the car. And it sucks that a car that fast, your season was ended by a pit road mistake.
That you couldn't recover from.
Correct. At
The same can be said for his teammate. Ty Gibbs, same thing. It's just marred in traffic and he just can't go anywhere. But again, he had a decent car to start that race and just, again, got marred back deep in the field. And that was kind of all she wrote, unfortunately.
Dude, he was fun to watch drive through that field. I don't know if you guys remember some of the
Oh, yeah.
he was bobbing and weaving in there. He was three wide getting pinched. He was not afraid. He was trying to, obviously, he knew the situation. When he got back there, it was, hey, get up on the wheel and go, son.
Yep.
But yeah, that I don't know. It sucks because, like you said, you know, in my opinion, you know, a mistake like that, it shouldn't be a race ender. If you got, you know, Martin Truex, if you got a top three car, which he had, you could argue, like, gotta find a way that these guys, a speeding penalty isn't the death of your race.
And all it was too is that he ran the wrong line going around the corner.
Yep. For
Simply
sure.
what it came down to. So,
Nope.
after that race, I didn't see his post-race interview, but after what he just did right there, I can hear him, his previous week interview already. I'm just tired of this shit, man.
It's ready for the season to be over.
Honestly, like, you know, like
Can't play like it.
he runs a perfect race. He's got a top three car, and he gets runs the wrong line, gets penalized, gets sent to the back, and can't recover from it. Like, I can just hear him going, I'm just tired of this shit.
No. Had enough.
And it sucks, to be honest.
Yeah, for sure.
I did see though, did he say this before Bristol though? He wants to run an Xfinity race when Dale Jr.
Yeah.
Yep.
That'd be fun.
Absolutely.
Which we, that was cool to see Junior running another race. Obviously,
It
that's there's
was.
a discussion around that amongst you especially.
Yeah.
But
Yeah. No, yeah. Well.
one question I want to pose out to you guys here real quick before we kind of jump off of the NASCAR as a whole. Did the first round live up to expectations?
Yes.
Do we feel like we got a good first round? Because obviously it was modified a little bit. We had Atlanta, Watkins Glen, and the Bristol race.
I'm going to say yes. Even despite the lack of passing at Bristol, I'm going to say yes. The first two races produced it. The first two races carried the load of the first round.
Sure.
That's where I sit. Three different disciplines. Three different driving styles, three different chances for drastically different drivers to get themselves through.
Say it met expectations. Am I, do I agree with it with the three tracks? Do I think we could rework it and make it a step it up a notch? Yeah, I'm in that camp, but I'm also in the camp of I'm okay with it. Again, like you said, gives three different disciplines, three different chances of different drivers. It's, you know, it's not 3 mile and a half, Kansas, Phoenix, and you know, whatever.
Sure. Yep.
Three different disciplines, level playing field gives, you know, the guys that are good on road courses a chance, gives guys that are out go super speedway and gives short tracks a chance. So, good with it. If it was up to me, would that be my first round? Nope, wouldn't be, but I'm all right with it.
That's fair.
If Bristol, obviously, if Bristol becomes a better race than what it was, I think that's a really damn good round. Maybe swap Atlanta out for Darlington, but
Yep. Ultimately, I still think Bristol needs to stay a cut race.
Yes.
You, for Christ, you could argue Bristol could be championship race.
Yeah, well, after this one, I don't know if you could make that argument now, but
You gotta fix the package, but
correct.
the aura around the race
Oh,
itself.
absolutely.
I mean, come
100%.
on. You want to talk about passing? Phoenix is just as bad, if not terrible. First race there last year. That's first race there this year. That's all anybody complained about. Couldn't pass anybody, but.
Yep. So, nope, that was just the question I wanted to pose out to you guys.
Sure. Yeah. Interesting to say the least. So, obviously, Kyle Larson just dominated the show. Do you have the finishing order up?
Give me a hot minute. I can get it to you.
Okay. Go ahead and get the finishing order. I will get the schedule pulled up to run through.
Well, while he's pulling up the schedule, I'll just run over the round of 16. So who we did eliminate? We did eliminate Martin Truex Jr., Ty Gibbs, Harrison Burton, and who was the other one?
Kozlowski.
Brad
Greg.
Keselowski. So those are the guys we eliminated. And then you're looking at your round of 12 is
The rest of them.
Your round of 12 is Kansas, Talladega, Charlotte, and then I'll just pull up the playoff standings here. And then you're looking at below the cut line to start this round. You're looking at Chase Briscoe, Alex Bowman, Suarez, and Cindric, who are below the cut line to start round two.
And honestly, I'm not sleeping on Briscoe at all. He's on a
Dude.
mission.
And all the news that is coming out of SHR right now is that shop is united to get that 14 to go as far as they can. So,
Look out.
for real. And especially when you got guys in the shop that are willing to be a sacrificial lamb like Gragson, who's willing to go to the track and say, "Hey, I'll throw whatever setup you think you might want, and if it's shit, I'll let you know." And when you
Yeah.
got some sacrificial lambs like that,
Data
I
baby.
mean, take it, yeah. And again, everybody just said like they are on the broadcast who they're talking about. The shop knows that this is their last run array as before the shop closes, and they are committed to making this,
They're making a run.
they're making a
Yep.
run. And let's not forget, I mean, he was battling electronic issues all night on Saturday. Had no rear view camera, was struggling with radio, electronics. It was, yeah. So, do we have a Cinderella story in there?
Stay tuned. Top 10 for Bristol. Obviously, Larson wins that one. Chase Elliott, second. Bubba Wallace, third. Denny Hamlin, fourth. Christopher Bell, fifth. Ryan Blaney, sixth. Ryan Preece, seventh. Chase Briscoe, eighth. Talking about a couple of SHR guys. Alex Bowman, ninth. And Ross Chastain rounded out your top 10.
Solid. So that kind of wraps up the Bristol Cup race for the weekend. So let's take a look at the schedule. Let's dig through some other winners for the weekend. Trucks and Arca Menards were also at Bristol. Lane Riggs wins in the trucks. William Swalich wins in the Arca car, clinches a championship there. Davenport wins Thursday night at Knoxville. XR Super Series gets a winner, and Cameron Marlar at Volunteer Speedway. So pretty cool deal for him. Cole Custer wins the Xfinity race. Justin Peck, as we had mentioned, with High Limit, personally as well at USAC. Bobby Pierce wins the Knoxville Nationals. Paul Reye Sprint Cars at Creek County Speedway. You got Noah Gass getting one done. Wabam Dirt Late Models at Sycamore. Mike Spitola gets it done. The World of Outlaw Sprint Cars headed to Thunder Bowl for a couple nights of racing. David Gravel got it done. Creek County again was Sam Haferty. Headed down to your four crown. We mentioned Jason Pursley gets a couple. Rico wins one. Thunderstruck 93 for the Midwest Tour. Cool deal here. They're back for the first time in quite a while. Justin Mondake captures his third career Midwest Tour win. And as we kind of look at the finishing order for that one, that was a pretty good feature. Mondake, Vandergeest, Reavers, Gaty, Fredrickson, Somers, Island, Sierakoski, Mueller, Valento, Stenjem, Swanson being your top 12. So good to see Island back in a car as
Yep.
well. NASCAR Wheel and Modified Tour at Monadnock. Patrick Emerling gets it done. World of Outlaws Sprint Cars at Thunder Bowl. Carson Macedo gets a feature. Past Super Lates at White Mountain. Derek Griffith gets one. American Canadian Tour, Gabe Brown. And then Formula One in Singapore. And that was Lando Norris.
McLaren is making it interesting for the Constructors' Championship here as we get in the later part of their season.
Absolutely, they are. So, those are some winners for the previous weekend worth of racing. So, let me go ahead and we'll jump into some race previews. Who wants the first one here?
I think this is kind of up Cam's alley here.
Well, I'll jump right in then. Race preview number one. We are looking at some dirt super late model racing here. And the Lucas Oil Series going to Brownstown on September 27th and 28th. So if you didn't know, the championship four is officially locked in for the Lucas Oil Late Model Series. And that is Ricky Thornton Jr., Devin Moran, Jonathan Davenport, and T-Mac, Tim MacCready. So again, that's your championship four there. There are, 20 contingency awards to be handed out at the end of the year. Big money, chase bonuses for 66,000, points fund for over $1 million, and totaling just over, $1.5 million. So, for $1,050,000. So, obviously big money there. And Lucas Oil goes back and revamps the final championship four after last year. A little bit of scrutiny from the drivers the way the championship was handed out. So went back and reworked it a little bit, and now we go.
Oh, that'd be cool to watch that one.
I will give one shout out here. Somebody who we encountered at Cedar Lake and was super fun to talk to, and just in his interview said how much effort he's put into it and how hard they've worked. T-Mac, Tim MacCready, putting himself in the final four in one of his interviews this past week, and just talking about how hard he's worked and how hard his team worked. And obviously he's in the Rocket One, so he's got a lot of pressure. That team is used to winning and winning big races. So, happy for T-Mac to get himself in there, and don't want to say a resurgence, but just a gentle reminder to everybody, he still got it and he still raced with the best of them.
Absolutely. Van Grohl, what do you got?
One of my favorite races, another favorite race of mine of the year, the BC 39 at the dirt track of Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Obviously, background on the track. This is a track that Brian Clausen helped design. And obviously, this race is an honor of him, that BC 39. Obviously, repping the shirt, I felt like was fitting for this. It's the sixth running of this race, a 3-day event that saw Thomas Meserol and Justin Grant win it last year. Justin Grant winning the main event. This is hands down probably one of the most prestigious events in midget racing, behind the Chili Bowl. As it honors, like I said, one of the greats in Brian Clausen, one that we lost too soon. As of the 20th, 64 cars are entered for the 3-day show. So no slouching drivers coming up to this one. So I'm excited. It'll be on Flow Racing for 3 nights. It is a USAC sanctioned event also, by the way. But either way, I'm excited. Be a good show.
Good car count, good track, a lot of competition. So, kind of another notable one as we look at it here, the Valley Star Credit Union 300, big late model stock race at Martinsville. So they'll race on Saturday night. This race usually comes with some ruffled feathers. Guys are passing is at a premium when it comes to this event. So there will be some hurt feelings at some point, but ultimately they'll have to crown a champ for that. Trevor Ward was your winner last year. If you remember, he had that absolutely wild battle with Landon Huffman when they ran two wide with about three to go in that race, and it was just back and forth side by side. Just a good clean race to round out that one. So that will be on Flow. So you can catch all the BC 39 and the Valley Star Credit Union 300. So if you got a screen and you're on one internet connection, you can watch as many of those races as you want.
And Lucas Oil.
Lucas Oil as well. So, Cam, what do you got for other races on the schedule coming up for the weekend?
Yeah, I love this first race that we're going to kick it off here. Castro Flow Racing Night in America at Brownstown. Love doing what they've been doing. They always throw a Castro night right before, a big show. So, Castro Flow Racing Night in America at Brownstown Speedway, 20,000 to win here coming up on Wednesday. So, good little Wednesday night teaser for you. USAC NOS Energy Midgets at the dirt track at MIS for the BC 39 as our tire change just talked about. We got the Wasota late models at Proctor Speedway, along with the World Outlaws late models at Boot Hill Speedway. Lucas Oil Dirt late models we touched on. Truck Series and all NASCAR series. Just get that out of the way right away. Heading out to Kansas. Going to be a fun weekend for them, along with the ARCA Menards series. So that'll be fun. Kansas has put on some fantastic racing. So we got IRA Sprint Cars up in my area here, Mississippi Thunder Speedway. Then the World Outlaw Sprint Cars go to Wayne County Speedway. ARCA Menards West go to Madera. Southern Super Series heads to Five Flags Speedway. Lucas Oil at Brownstown again. High Limit back in action at Florence Speedway. Powerise Sprint Cars at I-70. Touched on the Xfinity Series. We got a track special for the Valley Credit Union 300 at Martinsville. And then we got some IRA Sprint Cars at Plymouth. World Outlaw Late Models go to another show at Rocket Raceway Park. And then World Outlaw Sprint Cars head to Sharon Speedway. And then we've got some USAC NOS Energy Midgets at, oh, that's the BC 39 again. And then another dirt race here. We jump back into, they've been off for a while, the XR Super Series at Grayson County Speedway. And then we touched on already, the finale on Sunday will be Cup Series at Kansas, and obviously pumped up for that one and excited for just Kansas in general because Kansas is a track that is going to be no other way to put it than just awesome. So pumped up for that one.
Cam, I'm surprised when you hit the World of Outlaws at Wayne County, you didn't do your woo action because it's the Wooster Showdown.
I completely missed it. When I get going on that, I just get so locked in on I get less focused on the race name and more focused on what series and what track.
You're such a
And
woo guy. I figured that would have been perfect for you.
yeah,
Well,
huge
yeah.
woo guy.
Damn it. Well, I missed my opportunity there for the Wooster Showdown.
All right, fantasy recap. Let's make some race best picks, and we'll get this baby lot wrapped up.
Yeah, so we keep focusing on the playoffs side of things. Pretty strong week for everybody. Kellen, your lady topped all of us this week
You did.
on the old fantasy.
No.
So I do currently lead the playoffs still at 642. Cam, you're at 572. Kellen, you're at 563. Sophie's Pit Picks 516. Dietzel's at 507. Gasman's Girls at 487. So again, early in the playoffs for that. On the race picks side of things, Cam, you are making up some ground on me here. I'm only above by 43 points here, so I am not confident in my lead right now. And then Kellen, you're at 1423, which you're still within striking distance. A couple good races and you're within striking distance. So
No.
Kansas, Race picks. I'm gonna go first. Cam, you are second. Kellen, you are third. I am gonna go. Give me Christopher Bell.
Okay.
I like the Toyota camp.
All right. Cam?
Dude, I feel like this is just
Are you going out my playbook, previous winner?
I'm doing a little bit of waffling right now, back and forth between two. I think it's, I don't know. I just see this track and I know how it's going to drive and what's going to happen. And I'm just going to say he's going to go back to back. I'm going to go Hung Money.
I mean, he hung one on the field at Bristol, so. Yikes.
Do you not see Kansas and do you not go four
This is
lanes?
a
He
Larson
can
track.
run the old slide job. He can run the apron. He can run the wall. We'll see who Kellen picks, but I'll tell you who I was waffling between there.
Chase Elliott.
All right.
I was
Is that who you're
waffling between
waffling
Larson.
over?
No, I was waffling between Larson and Reddick.
Reddick's a good pick too. I thought about him, but I need to get off of my previous winner strategy here. So,
Yeah, for sure. Well, there you have it. A few short race recaps, a few long, in-depth conversations about everything racing related. We talked on the NASCAR Cup race at Bristol. Recap the fantasy week along with making some Kansas picks. So, as we've kind of looked, all of our championship four picks are still alive. It's going to get a little tougher here as we go, but championship picks are still alive. So, again, we appreciate anyone tunes in, gets a like, a listen. Be sure to smash the bell to get notifications when content comes out, so you'll be the first to know what we're bringing you. But that wraps up episode 52. But until then, we'll see you all next week for episode 53 of the Tuesday Track Talk.